Tech of Sports, Episode 4 for March 28th, 2012, Greg Schwimm. This week on the Tech of Sports, Greg Schwimm, comedian, author, syndicated columnist. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There is an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher radio app for all iOS devices, Android, BlackBerry, and Palm. Get Stitcher for free with all your Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is also a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. And join the chat room and listen to the show live. Welcome to the show tonight. This is Rick, and we have a show tonight I've been looking forward to for a while now, where we usually talk about semi-serious technology issues and topics. This week we're going to maybe take a look at the lighter side of sports. We're not going to talk about triangulation, focus-based analytics, and post-concussion syndrome, but I think we're going to have a great show and maybe laugh a little tonight, because our guest is a comedian, author, and nationally syndicated columnist, and a sports fan, and just an all-around funny guy, Greg Schwimm. And a little about Greg. He's a graduate of Northwestern University's prestigious School of Journalism. He originally settled in Florida. He was an award-winning reporter for NBC affiliate in West Palm Beach, but he always had the comedy bug, and it bit him when he returned to Chicago, where he honed his act in nightclubs, and he caused his parents to wonder where they went wrong. When he began inserting material about business and technology into his act, his audience members approached him and said, "You should really come down to my office and tell those jokes." Greg and his Comedy with a Bite, with Bite as B-Y-T-E, theme was born. He now does custom shows that provide a hilarious look at today's corporate environment and the latest tools used to conduct business. His client list includes such corporate giants as McDonald's, Microsoft, Motorola, IBM, Verizon Wireless, United Airlines, and Cisco, and the list goes on and on. He was a stand-up for many years, and Greg performed with the likes of Jay Leno, Ray Romano, and other heavyweights in the world of comedy. Today, he headlines close to 100 corporate dates a year, and he writes a very funny weekly humor column. It's distributed by Tribune Media Services, so you might want to check that out. He also is the author of a very funny book that I have the own the Kindle copy to, Text Me If You're Breathing, Observations, Frustrations, and Life Lessons from a Low-Tech Dad. Greg, I really appreciate you being here tonight.
Rick, it's my pleasure. I'm very sorry we're not going to be talking about focus-based analytics. I had so many jokes just all set up and ready to go about that.
I thought maybe you had a little experience with post-concussion syndrome.
If I did, then I wouldn't remember any of my material, though, would I?
No, but that would be a good excuse, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Old sports injuries. Sorry I'm not funny tonight. Yeah.
I've seen people go to the old war injury card for years, so it's somewhat similar. Let's start by talking about your book a little, and the title of it is Text Me If You're Breathing, Observations, Frustrations, and Life Lessons from a Low-Tech Dad. I guess it came out probably a little over a year ago now, and just kind of wondering if you could tell the audience how maybe you got the idea, the inspiration for the book.
Yeah, well, I mean, when my wife and I had kids, we immediately realized that every decision that you make with your children always seems to have a technology hook to it. And that really came from the time they were very little. I mean, we went out to buy a swing set, and we thought we'd be in and out of there in about 30 minutes. And we were there for about 4 hours while they told us about all the, the different types of screws and the load bearings on the swing set and all the different safety features and so forth. And the more the baby seat was the same thing. You know, you had to. Did you want to go with the lift right heavyweight seat or with all the weight distribution scales on there and so forth? So, and the more I started thinking about this, the more I thought this would really make a good book. As a child goes through life, we're going to be having to continue to deal with new technologies that are coming out. So I wrote the book basically trying to, it's basically a humorous take on me trying to stay one step ahead of my children when it comes to all this new technology, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Twitter, whether it be iPad apps, anything like that. It's a humorous take on what I think is a serious subject.
Yeah, it is pretty serious. But did you kind of use friends and maybe family members, maybe your age, kind of run some of the jokes or some of the storylines by them to see if they got it or they thought it was funny?
A little bit, yeah. I did some of that. A lot of the stuff that's in the book are things that maybe couldn't quite make it into my stand-up act, just because when you do live stand-up comedy, it has to be kind of quick, and the audience members want those kind of fast-paced jokes. And what I wanted to do was flesh out these topics a little bit more. So I might have maybe put a line or two about a particular subject into my stand-up act, and if it hit with the audience, I thought, okay, maybe I'm onto something here. So now I'll go back to my computer and I'll just start writing it in long form. And those are really the chapters that that made it into the book. I mean, there's a very lengthy chapter in there about owning a digital camera. And the idea of, you know, taking Christmas card photos. Now, it used to be that you just took one photo of your children and you took it to the local drugstore and, you know, you got it back. And whatever they brought back, that was the photo. And now you can take 2,000 photos and shoot, delete, and crop, and pan, and you just all, and it ends up where it's Christmas Eve and you still don't have the photo, and you just have to send out whatever whatever the last one was. So you're really not getting any better at this whole thing. It's just a little more confusing. And I would mention that topic in my stand-up act, and people laugh at it. Okay, I'm onto something here. So that's the kind of stuff you get in the book.
Yeah, I think your target audience is probably parents, but have you heard from maybe kids that stumbled upon the book too and said, hey, that's my parent you wrote, that's my parents that you wrote about there?
Absolutely, I did. In fact, I did sort of my own little infomercial for the book. I posted a YouTube video called the Clean Your Room Rap. And that it's me rapping about how to get my daughter to clean their room. But the whole idea of it was that you had to kind of speak their language. And I feel like the book does that because it, in a way, it sort of portrays me as the idiot dad. And I think most kids would look at that and go, that is exactly the way my parents are with me when it comes to Facebook and when it comes to all this stuff that I want to do, whether it comes to, you know, getting a MacBook or a new laptop or anything like that. So, yeah, I think kids can definitely relate to it.
Yeah, the quote-unquote idiot dad has been a staple on sitcoms for years. So you're just kind of playing that role. In the book.
Yeah, in a way, I think the idiot dad has really been exaggerated on sitcoms. I don't think dads are completely clueless like the dads that are portrayed on, say, in Everybody Loves Raymond, or to some extent, the dad on Modern Family, or maybe what Tim Allen is portraying now. I think dads are involved, but they still, because we work and we travel and maybe we're a little overwhelmed, we don't. You know, we're not there for all the decisions and all the new technology that is suddenly being put upon us and that our kids are using. So I think that's more, you know, like when I say low tech dad in the title, I don't consider myself a low tech dad, but I think compared to my kids, yeah, I am low tech.
Yeah, we all are, because the kids pick up the stuff so fast. And
exactly.
And maybe because you're doing other things, you know, you maybe haven't heard about the latest social network or the latest app. So it's not your fault. It's just, the kids are just more tuned into the stuff, I think.
Yeah. My 15-year-old is already talking about Pinterest. And I was like, what the heck is that? And she wants to get on that. That's the new hot social networking application. So now I have to, you know, Google Pinterest and what the heck is it and is it safe? So I'm always, like most parents, I feel like I'm always playing catch up.
Yeah,
that's why you have to laugh at that.
It's never going to end. So no. You just got to keep up with it.
Absolutely.
I know that the show is a little bit about, has a sports angle here too. And I know you're a sports fan and a tennis player and a golfer. You try to play golf like the rest of us. And in your column, you wrote one of your syndicated columns about kind of a golf theme about a putter you own and how the technology in the putter is, you know, supposed to cure all your ills when it comes to putting. Do you enjoy trying to follow the trends in sports technology and try to keep up with that as well?
You know, I've always said I don't do that. I mean, my big sports are tennis and golf, and I've never been a big equipment guy. I've had the same set of clubs for about the past 7 or 8 years now. As a matter of fact, I have a tailor-made driver. I think it's an R5, and I think they're up to like R13 now. But my driver has these two adjustable screws in the head, and I'm afraid to touch them because I'm hitting the ball very straight, and people have said, well, you know, if you turn those screws a little bit, you can maybe fade the ball. I'm like, No. I don't want to even touch the screws because
then
I don't know how I'll get them back to where they were. But my wife actually did buy me a Bettinardi putter, which they have a Bettinardi factory, I guess you'd call it, not too far from my house, where they actually design the putter for you. And you actually go there and they videotape your stroke. And then this guy puts this putter in about 17 different machines, all of which were probably used by the CIA to interrogate prisoners at some point. And this guy is sitting with the putter and he's bending it. And there's like sparks coming out of the thing. And then he gives it back to me and says, "You're ready. There you go." And I took it out and immediately four putted the first three greens. So, so it's not the putter, it's the putty. Or the putter-er, if you want to call it. So, no, I'm not a big believer in technology.
Yeah, I've been offered numerous times to go into these golf simulators and invited to some of these golf tech places where they analyze your swing. And so I'm always afraid to do it because I'm always afraid that I'm going to get done and the guy's going to come out with the little pad of paper and say, "Sir, there's nothing we can do for for your game.
Get your affairs in order." Yeah.
That's right. So I just keep using the same old clubs I've been hacking around with for years. So
when my putting guru started to look at his watch, that's when I knew it was hopeless because I putted for about 30 minutes. And once he started to get distracted, then I realized, okay, this is not going well.
Yeah. And we all know the feeling. So right. Don't feel bad.
Thank you.
You're based in Chicago, which is a great sports town and a home of some sports technology companies up there. Wilson's home, based up there, and I guess one of the biggest changes that hit Chicago when it comes to sports technology was back almost over 20 years now when Wrigley Field actually got lights, and they made a big deal about when the old lady hit the button and turned the lights on and stuff, and that was supposed to cure all the problems with the Cubs. Why hasn't that happened?
Yeah, right. How's that working out? That was 1988. You know, I don't know. I think my feeling, and I think a lot of Cub fans are really starting to get annoyed. In fact, as a matter of fact, I went to college with a guy named Wally Hayward, who is the chief marketing officer now for the Cubs, and he took the job about 2 years ago. And it's weird because that was like after all these years of filling Wrigley Field, all of a sudden that first year they were having to do deals. All of a sudden you saw these marketing promotions about, you know, half price beer, which is never a good thing at Wrigley Field. I mean, trust me, you know, Cub fans don't need to drink half price. They'll do fine at $4.50. But and I actually sent him an email once. I said, "I bet you didn't think this job was going to be so tough because Wrigley Field pretty much sells itself." But I think now that the Cub fans are just getting a little bit tired, lights or no lights, I think we're tired of excuses. All the lights did was they gave us one more excuse. Well, it's very tough to play day games after night games, and we're still trying to play all these day games because it is Wrigley Field and people do love day baseball. Well, okay, but I mean, you got to do something. You either have to either play all your night games or play all your games in the day. But if the lights were intended to make the club better, I'd like to hear what that argument was. If you play all night games, perhaps, but if you keep flipping it back and forth, all you're going to do is mess the players up. If you buy into that argument.
Yeah, I think the lights or not, the Cubs haven't learned over the years. The problem has been always been lights or no lights. It's pitching is what it comes down to.
It is. Yeah. No, it is pitch. It's pitching and spending money on a farm system and developing young players as opposed to, pouring all these money into these high priced free agents that are in their 30s, like Soriano, like Aramis Ramirez, who might have one good year. And then, they got rid of Zambrano. obviously that's a good sign, I think. Now, you know that guy's going to go have a great year. Because everybody that leaves the Cubs has a great year. I mean, the Cardinals owe most of their World Series to ex-Cub players.
And yeah, that goes all the way back to Lou Brock.
Bruce Sutter, yeah.
Lou Brock, even further back than that.
Yeah. The Cardinals are the Cubs to thank for pretty much every piece of hardware in their stadium.
Yeah, Zambrano's probably going to pitch a no-hitter against the Cubs this year.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And then and Ozzie Guillen will just be standing up there going, see, you just had to talk to him the right way in Spanish.
Yeah, I would think comedians in Chicago could fill up their whole act probably just doing Cub jokes, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, at the same time, you can only make fun of the Cubs so much. As bad as they are, people are still very loyal. Now, I live on the South Side, and I am surrounded by Sox fans, and Sox fans they're nasty to Cubs fans. I mean, if you're Cubs fan and you say, who do you like? And you say the White Sox, they say, oh, that's cool. If you're a Sox fan and you say, who do you like? You say the Cubs, they really don't treat you well from that moment on. So it's a totally different mindset.
Yeah, to me, that's part of the charm of the Cubs is they're known as lovable losers. And I think if the Cubs ever did win the World Series, I think that's, they would take a hit because of that almost. I mean, it's almost fun to watch the Cubs lose. That's part of the fun of it.
If the Cubs ever win the World Series, Rick, I want to watch it on television from another state. I want to be so far out of town because if this town ever wins if the Cubs ever win the World Series, this town will go upside down for I don't know how many days. And I would, even though I live in the suburbs, that's still too close to Wrigley Field for my comfort level.
Yeah, I have a feeling the next morning Wrigleyville would look like bombed out Beirut.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, turning maybe to a little social media talk, and I know that you use social media for not only to promote your act, but you use it kind of on a personal basis too, and especially I think YouTube is probably your best outlet when it comes to social media, because companies or organizations that are looking to hire you can actually see a little clip of your act, and there's nobody better to promote you than yourself.
Yeah.
How do you keep up with social media yourself, and how do you manage what your kids are doing on social media?
Well, the best I can do as far as the managing the kids is just to occasionally look at their Facebook page every now and then and make sure that they're not posting anything that they shouldn't be. Make sure they're not, especially when it comes to photos. One of the favorite jokes in my act that always resonates with the parents is it took me a while to let my daughter on Facebook. And she was always saying to me, she said, you're on Facebook. Why can't I be on Facebook? And I said, well, yeah, Facebook's a great way to reconnect with people. I said, you're 14. Who have you lost touch with? So she had no comeback to that one, you know.
somebody from kindergarten.
Exactly. Yeah. I haven't seen you since we got off the bus. So let me go home on Facebook. But anyway, so, you know, that's really about all I can do with the kids is just to make sure. And it's just amazing what kids post on, what they're commenting on, whether it's, you know, who's bringing alcohol to the party. We've read stuff like that, not from my kids, but you just want to take these kids and go, how stupid are you? But kids don't. And that's the thing with the kids. You have to say, look, you put something on there, it's up there forever. As far as how I use social media. Yeah, you hit it on the head. YouTube for a comedian is probably the best form because, like you said, people want to see you. That you have to prove that you're funny. But I have to be careful about that too, because I don't want to put too much of my act up on a line where everybody can see it. I want people to be surprised when they hire me, pleasantly surprised. But I do use YouTube a lot, and I use Twitter a lot. Those are probably my two biggest social media avenues. As a comedian, you know, obviously you always are hoping something goes viral. And that all of a sudden there's some buzz generated about you. And in the world of corporate comedy, that buzz is obviously, it's very easy to get that buzz. And you want to be talked about among other corporations and big corporations that might hire you, maybe hire you for multiple dates. So that's always what I'm looking to do when I use social media.
And do you kind of, maybe the companies that you're going to go and work for, do you kind of monitor their social media feeds maybe for a few weeks before you go to see them or to perform for them, just to kind of see what's going on with maybe the culture of their company?
Absolutely. I will, you know, I'll start following them on Twitter. Usually right after the show's over, I unfollow them. I don't mean to hurt their feelings, but yeah, you know, I can only read so many tweets about cloud computing and R4 V3 widgets before I have to say that's enough. But and most companies have YouTube channels as well. I will look and see what they're promoting on YouTube, and a lot of that stuff works its way into my show. That's kind of one of the ways I kind of poke some good-natured fun at companies, because typically, like on their YouTube channels, they use their own employees who are not the most camera savvy people in the world. So I might maybe show a clip or something like that. So but I do monitor them closely because I want to know what they're talking about and what they're excited about.
Yeah, I know being at some of the comedy clubs here in Atlanta, when they usually have maybe a couple openers before the name guy will come on stage, and usually when those openers get done, they have a little camera in the back of the room, and they're filming their set, I guess, so maybe they can take it home and look at it and see what maybe hit and what missed. Do you tape some of your shows for your own use, just to kind of see maybe how you did, maybe what the audience reaction was to specific jokes or bits that you do?
Yeah, sometimes I tape, but even if I don't tape, I remember. I remember what worked and what didn't, and especially if it's new material, anything new that I'm trying, I am very cognizant during the show of how is this going over? Is it resonating with the audience? Should I build on it? Should I change it? Anything like that? So yeah, taping definitely helps. Videotaping obviously helps me too, just to see, you know, gestures and how I work, because I'm working some pretty big rooms. I mean, the average corporate, you know, the average comedy club probably seats about maybe 150, 200. The rooms I'm working seat maybe, my average audience is maybe 500 or 600. So you have a bigger audience, and obviously you have to kind of prepare yourself a little bit different, and your persona on stage has to be a little different. You have to be bigger.
Yeah, sure. I know when I ask people in the sports world maybe what the biggest change in sports technology is in their sport, they all pretty much say, sports that have it, are, they say the instant replay is the number one change, that, and it's usually almost 99% of the people are for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know you're a sports fan. Are you appreciative of instant replay tech and improving technology in sports for the fans when they watch it?
Absolutely. I am all in favor of anything like that, whether it's instant replay, whether it's, I mean, you and I are big tennis fans. I am a huge proponent of the instant replay on serves, and whether it was out or not. And I know that some of the top players don't like it. I know Federer being one that can't stand instant replay. McEnroe is a huge proponent of it, obviously. But I think it's great. I think as technology makes sports faster and different than they were, then it's only natural that you need some of this kind of stuff. I mean, a tennis serve is going 50 miles an hour faster than it did back in the 1960s or the 1970s, and yet you still have the same, I mean, eyesight hasn't improved that much, correct? So you still have one guy, you can't expect to have one guy still calling the lines on a serve that's 50 miles an hour faster and be right that much of the time. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I for a Yahoo piece I did last summer, I know a couple of the lines people on the men's tour, and I interviewed one of them I did a feature piece on lines people, and I asked him, I said, are you nervous, you know, that the call, how do you feel if a call you made is getting reversed? And he said he doesn't feel bad about it. They're doing the best job they can. And, you know, they have the same goal that the players do. They want to make sure the call is right because, mm-hmm. you know, there's so much money and riding on these matches and these, you know, endorsements and stuff. So, I mean, they're all working toward the same goal, I think.
Yeah. Now, here's something I'm not a huge fan of, and I don't know what your opinion on this is. You see this in golf sometimes, is the people calling in with the rules infractions. I'm kind of on the fence about that. I mean, that now that leads to the whole, now you've kind of gotten into what what has happened to social media, whereas everybody is allowed to join the conversation and people feel like that's perfectly in their right. How do you feel about that? About, you know, Dustin Johnson at the PGA tournament 2 years ago and moving the blades of grass, and somebody calls in and next thing you know, he's out of a playoff and he doesn't win the PGA championship because of that. What's your take on that?
I'm wondering who these people are that are calling that are calling in, and I have a theory exactly. about it. I have a theory. I think they are the same people that when a tornado comes, there are the people standing outside, interviewed by the news people, saying, "I saw the twister come in, and it made the train noise, and you know, yeah. it blew the house." And I think they're the same people.
The ones videotaping the hurricane, as opposed yeah. to. Standing in their bathtub with their hands over their head saying, "Hey, there's a hurricane coming. Maybe we should get the heck out of the way."
Yeah, when I'm watching a golf tournament on television, if I'm not A, sleeping during it, I mean, I'm not paying close enough attention to see a blade of grass move on, you know, or a piece of pine straw move. So, I mean, right. my hat's off to them for paying that close of attention, but I'm wondering, you know, what's going on in the rest of their lives.
Exactly. Right. So yeah, you can, that just, you pretty much have the big L loser on your head. I think when you're watching golf that closely, and then my question is, who do you call? Who exactly? I just saw rules for action. What do you dial 1-800-PGA-TOUR? I don't know.
I don't know either.
Who did he call? And how did he get through?
I don't have Johnny Miller's number. I don't know anybody that does. So I mean, I don't know how they. Especially if they're calling up to the booth. They said, because I've heard them one time in the booth. They said, "We received a call here in the booth. What's the number for?" They're not putting it on the TV or anything, so I don't know how they get through.
There's a story right there. What is the number that you call?
I can't get through to my cable company when I'm trying to call. How am I going to get through to, you know, a tower on an 18th hole?
Yeah, Jim Nance says, "Hang on, I got to take this." Rick's on the line.
If they do that, you have permission to come over to my house and strangle me. Oh no, my wife would have done it before you got here, probably. So
just for watching golf, she would probably strangle you, right?
Yeah, she doesn't get that at all. So
no, women don't understand that. My wife doesn't get the whole golf too. So
yeah, well, I'm having a good time here tonight. So Greg, if you want to just take a break for a second and get a sip of water. I'm going to do a quick little spot for Amazon. And for all the listeners out there, there's no extra cost to use the Amazon link we have here at Netcast Studio. It's netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And I always try to promote something that you can buy on Amazon with that link. And I don't think there's anything better tonight than to get on there and buy Greg's book, Text Me If You're Breathing. And whether you read books in the Kindle form or, you know, in the paper form, it's a great read and a quick read. And, you know, if someone's heading to the beach for spring break or a Mother's or Father's Day gift,
Father's Day is not that far off.
It's a perfect gift. But also on Amazon is still your old comedy CD, Comedy with a Bite. And that yep. That still holds up over time as well. So, I mean, that's a viable purchase on Amazon as well.
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you for plugging that. Appreciate it.
Sure. And that's at netcaststudio.com/Amazon. If anyone wants to get on there and check it out, and it's not expensive. You're not, you know, killing people with the prices on the stuff. So it's a bargain, I think.
Yeah.
While we get out of the ad, Greg, if a company is interested in looking at some of your material or talking to you about booking you for an event, or if somebody wants to see more information about your book, I'll give you a chance here to let them know how they can contact you or check you out online or any other place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can always go to my website, obviously, which is Comedy with a Byte, Comedy with a B-Y-T-E, like computerbyte.com. Right. And also, I like to plug my YouTube channel as much as I can because that I spend, like we talked about, I spend a lot of time on that as far as showing people how a lot of different ways that humor can be used at a corporate event, whether it's stand-up, whether it's having me MC for a three-day meeting, whether it's me doing man-on-the-street interviews with some of their employees, which is always a big hit. So my YouTube channel is obviously youtube.com/ Greg Schwem. That's GREGSCHWEM.
Yeah, there's some funny stuff on there, and I really like your man on the street type things that you actually do when you're at the convention, like from the convention floor. And it's funny how when you talk to people, some of those people act like they don't even know why they're there. So
that's my audience right there. Why are we here? And why do I work for this company?
I don't know if you have to go through numerous people to find those funny ones, or you can kind of spot them coming right down the aisle. But it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing that. I enjoy working off the cuff. I think that particularly in a corporate environment where things tend to be very stuffy and very rehearsed, that if you can come in there and just kind of lighten the mood and loosen everybody up and say, hey, we're gonna work without a net on this meeting. I think everybody from the attendees to even the CEO of the company really enjoy that. You might have to convince them that this is the way to go. But once they buy into that concept, I think you're going to have a much more entertaining meeting and something that people haven't seen in a while. And again, when you're in a work environment, what's wrong with trying something new, and what's wrong with laughing a little bit while getting your message across?
Yeah, and I like the fact that each one of your shows is kind of new, because you customize them for the company or for the event that you're going to be performing at. And have you found that personal touch is what you hear about maybe after the, if they give you a critique or an evaluation, they really, that personal touch is really what seals the deal for you sometimes?
Absolutely. I mean, corporate audiences are not stupid. They are, you're not in a comedy club with a bunch of people drinking. And I mean, these folks are still basically at work. Even if the convention's being held in Vegas or Scottsdale or Orlando or something, they're still in a work environment. And, they know when you're phoning one in, and I think it's very important to just right off the top let them know. You can do it through jokes, and maybe you joke about their website, but at least that shows them that you were on their website. I might make a joke about the blog that the CEO wrote. Maybe he wrote something kind of funny or sort of a sentence that I thought didn't make sense, and people will laugh at that. But they know. I wouldn't have written that joke had I not read the blog. And I think people are very appreciative of that. And they realize that, hey, this is something that we're seeing something totally new here by somebody who took the time to do the research.
Yeah, I think they really appreciate that. But when you do a show, do you have your own little guidelines for maybe an area that you won't touch or a line you won't cross? Or do the company sometimes say, you know, you can, anything's fair game except for X, Y, Z?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are some. I mean, I think you have to really straddle the line between making light of a company and flat out mocking them. You start mocking, and then people get very defensive, as they should, because this is their life's work and they're very passionate about what they do. Maybe that's why they're at this event, is because they maybe earned a trip or they're here to learn about something new. I did a show. I'll give you an example. I did a show for McDonald's several years ago, and I don't remember the Arch Deluxe. The Arch Deluxe is going to go down as still one of the biggest failures it was the whole hot sides. Remember that? The hot side stays hot, the cold side is cold. It was basically just a cheeseburger with lettuce and tomato on it. It was
actually pretty good.
It was good, but it was just like, really? This is what you spent millions of dollars on? I don't think they quite made back the money. And they said to me, they said, we know that the Arch Deluxe, didn't go over like it was supposed to. And they basically said to me, we can take a joke. Don't belabor the point. You know, a couple of jokes is fine, but don't do 10 minutes on the Arch Deluxe, if you know what I mean. And I'm very aware of that. And if, obviously, there are certain topics that I think are taboo right now. I mean, it's been a tough few years for corporate America. A lot of companies have had to lay off tons of people. So as a corporate comedian, do you want to go in there and do jokes about layoffs and, hey, well, at least you people are still employed? I mean, that's not going to get you anywhere. And I think a lot of comedians have really struggled in corporate environments because they don't understand that. Then they come off stage and they say, well, that audience was horrible. No, the audience wasn't horrible. The audience was good. You didn't prepare the right way. And I think that's why there's very few comedians that do corporate that do corporate shows or know how to do it. Obviously, there's other rules too. You have to be politically correct, and you can't use profanity. And it helps to own a suit, which takes about three quarters of the comedians out of the running right there. Sure. But I have found the audiences to be very challenging, but also the most appreciative audiences that I've ever worked for. And that's why I really enjoy doing stand-up for the business world.
Yeah, it really is your comfort zone, I think. Yeah. So it's great that you found that niche. Let's talk a little bit about apps, because everyone else is everybody else is talking about them now.
Oh, yes.
And I got a little clip here from your act here that we'll play here real quick.
Okay.
What would we do without our apps, ladies and gentlemen? We use them for everything now. We're dependent. We need an app to figure out how to get to this hotel. We need an app to figure out what we should be eating every day. And I'm no different. I don't mean to sound hypocritical, because I'm not. I mean, I use apps too. In fact, I used an app to decide whether or not I was going to perform for this particular organization. I use this one right here. This is the Vampire Detector. This is $1.99 on your iPhone or your Droid phone. What you do is you download this, and then you just hold it in front of somebody, or you wave around, and it'll determine whether or not that person's a vampire. And they saw me doing that when you guys came in, and they came, some of the folks from IROM came over and said, "Greg, would you put that away? There are no vampires here today." I go, "Really? So you're telling me that IROM does not contain any blood-sucking individuals who feast on weaker beings simply to enhance their own self-worth and preservation?" And they said, "Well, now, we didn't say that exactly."
Yeah, that's just a great example of how you take a current subject or a current topic and you kind of customize it for the event and the company that you're performing for.
Right, and just about every organization I work for, a lot of them create apps just for the meeting that they're going to be at. So the first thing I'll do is I'll download that app and I'll start monitoring it. I will do the same thing with their, like you said, with their Twitter feed. And if they're, if there's some silly thing that everybody's tweeting about during the event, I have no problem throwing that up on a video screen and putting that in my act too. Because as I said, I think people really enjoy laughing at themselves. So that's Absolutely. Worked out really well. Technology has just really helped me expand on, it's a never-ending source of material is what it is.
Sure. What about being a sports fan? Do you have and apps that you use to follow sports maybe when you're out or when you're traveling? Does that come into play at all for you?
You know, I'm a big PGA Tour. I use the PGA Tour app. I'm obviously on ESPN to catch up on the sports scores. I haven't found anything that's really – I downloaded one. It's some fitness app or something like that, and I haven't even poked it yet. Is that what you do when you get an app? Do you poke it? How do you launch an app on the iPad? What's the word? Is it poke, touch?
I don't know.
I don't know. I'm almost afraid to. I did poke it and open it. It's way too complicated. I had to log on to Facebook and make them share all this stuff, so I haven't done it yet. But I don't know. Is there anything that you're using that you could recommend?
Well, I mean, ESPN has a bunch of apps.
Sure.
I mean, I downloaded one and, it wasn't exactly what I was looking for. So I went on to the next one and then went on to the next one. And right now I have like five ESPN apps on my iPad and I can never remember which one to load up to see right. exactly the score or the sport I'm trying. So I got like five ESPN apps open and I'm trying to shuttle between them to see all the scores. It's kind of trial and error on my part.
Yeah. Wimbledon, when Wimbledon starts up, Wimbledon's got a great app. And I obviously it's not on there now, but I'll put that on there when Wimbledon starts because that's really involved and it's got some great stuff on it.
Yeah, all four tennis Grand Slam tournaments have really good apps, and all of them actually have – you can listen to the radio feed of tennis, something that I'd never even knew existed until I went to Wimbledon back in the early 2000s, and they had it on two different channels on the radio. You could listen to tennis, and it's wild listening to tennis being called on the radio.
Especially doubles. I would think doubles would really be, put two guys trying to, serve, comes in net, volley, 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 volley. Probably the way that would sound, right?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I'll have to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
a little more serious topic, you have two daughters that are now playing sports, and you follow them around and try to get them. I don't know, maybe you're trying. They're aiming for a college scholarship, like so many. Are you amazed kind of by the technology now that kids use for training in their sports? And are you one of those little league dads in the stands yelling at the kids and the opponents during the games?
I hope I'm never that one. I mean, I have managed my kids' softball teams. My older one is in volleyball now, and she plays club volleyball. And it's I get on my soapbox about this, Rick. These sports now with these kids are almost becoming a full-time job.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really sad. I think it's sad that kids are being basically forced to specialize in a sport. I think if you I have listened to three different ex-athletes, ex-professional athletes talk in corporate settings, and including Cal Ripken being one of them. And all three of them said the one thing that they really are dismayed at now is that kids can't play more than one sport. And this is coming from professional athletes. And I find that really interesting because, you know, my daughter plays club volleyball. And, you know, I think kids' sports now are becoming, technology aside, I think kids' sports are becoming more of the haves versus the have-nots. And these clubs, first and foremost, this is a business. And I think all of them just need to hang a sign out on the front door that says, we will make your child a champion, providing you have the money to do it. And I think that's really sad. I think it's sad that I was just at a volleyball tournament in Indianapolis. And yeah, there's college scouts there. My daughter has already said she doesn't want to play in college. I'm fine with that. I have a niece who was on a full soccer ride at the University of Iowa. And I sometimes wonder if she missed out on some of the college experience, because they pretty much own you, you know, once you go to college. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of parents out there that this is the only way their kid's going to get a college education is by hopefully getting an athletic scholarship. But I really do think that these sports clubs need to step back a little bit and realize that going to all these tournaments and the money that's involved and the idea that you just expect parents to drop what they're doing and fly their kids off to Southern California for a weekend. And if that means taking their child out of school for 2 days, that's it. I think that's sad in a way. I think it's taken the fun out of sports. And I think that somebody, if these clubs would ask the kids, hey, are you enjoying playing an 80 game baseball season? I think a lot of the kids would say, actually, no, I'm not. I would be happy with playing a 30-game season during the summer and maybe having late July and August off to hang at the pool with my buddies. You know, kid, I think that these clubs are leading to very high burnout rates among kids. A lot of times, I think when they get to high school, they're sick of it because they've played so much at 10, 11, and 12. I think it's leading to a lot of injuries that you just never used to see in kids. I never knew of any kids – that were 13 when I was growing up that had a severed Achilles.
Or tearing a rotator cuff.
A rotator cuff, an ACL. I don't even know what that was. And we've got three kids in my neighborhood now that have had ACL injuries. I just think that's sad, especially among girls. I mean, these are injuries that girls should not be getting, period, that, much less when they're 13.
Yeah, Dr. Jim Kovach, who was on last week, a former NFL player and a doctor and serves on the NFL Head, Neck, and Spine Committee. So this guy knows what he's talking about. He says that kids are at a much higher risk for injury that don't specialize in sports. He said they need to play two, three sports just to so they used different muscles and stuff. He said the injury rate's higher because of that. Let's wrap up with the question I ask all my guests here, the last question, maybe you have more than one, but the one piece of technology that you can't live without in your performances or in your life.
Wow. Okay. Well, in my performances, I cannot live without without PowerPoint or some form of visual support. And really, it's because I think audiences now are very visual. They are used to seeing as opposed to just hearing.
Sure.
So I maybe that's something that I've kind of backed myself into a corner on. I think not. I think just the opposite. I think that having visuals in my show makes me a little bit unique and also opens up a whole different realm of material. So that would be in my professional life. And I think in my personal life, even though I've only had the iPad for about 3 months now, I can't see myself traveling without that thing because it is addicting. And plane rides are now completely a lot more fun now that I've got the iPad. So I can't
complain about productive
that.
Too.
Yes, exactly. So
yeah, that was great, Greg. I appreciate it. Give the audience one more chance to hear your contact information and where they can check you out online.
Sure. It's Comedy with a Byte, comedywithabyte.com, YouTube.com/ Greg Schwem, GregSchwem. And please check me out. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm Corp Comic, C-O-R-P Comic. And I would love to be friends with you on Facebook, too. So you can friend me, link with me, tweet with me. No stalking, though. There's a fine line between following and stalking.
Yeah, we need to get you some more followers on Twitter there.
So. There you go. Exactly. Thank you.
Greg, I appreciate it. That was a blast. The most fun show we've had so far here.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rick. I really appreciate it. Thanks much.
Sure. Sure. And that's going to wrap us up for tonight. And just wanted to tell you again that Netcast Studio has many other shows that you may be interested in. And you can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out the variety of content and shows available. Waves of Tech will be coming up later tonight. You've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast on Netcast Studio Production.